This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Welcome to the Dreamers Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Pardo, and today I am interviewing my great aunt, Sue Pardo Sr., for my great uncle, Michael Pardo Sr., posthumously, who lived his dreams through heavy duty trucks. Welcome to the show, Aunt Sue.
Hello.
Thank you for coming on.
You're welcome, Joe.
Let's get started by giving some background about yourself and your relationship with Uncle Mike, and then go into how Mike lived his life.
Okay, well, I met Uncle Mike about 1985. I worked for a trucking company, and he had a repair business. One of the customers had a truck in the shop that couldn't pay for it, and another customer had a truck in the shop that she inherited from her mother. So she needed a driver on the truck, so Mike put them together. And they leased the truck on with the trucking company I was working for, and I used to dispatch him. He would take care of all the loads and stuff. So we used to talk through the week. Then on Fridays, I would collect the paperwork and pay the drivers. Well, one week he said he was going for Italian seafood. And I said, oh, I like seafood. And he said, well, you want to come with us? And I was like, I kind of felt like I had invited myself. So I said, no, that's okay. So the next week when I talked to him, he asked me out and said, look, you want to go get seafood? And I said, yes. And that's where it began. We saw each other from October to January, and then I moved in with them. I guess it was August. They had moved the business from Deptford down to Sewell. And when they moved the business, the girl that was working in the office apparently didn't know a whole lot, because Mike asked me to go down and set up the files in the office. So I did. I went down and set up the files, but I set them up very generally. Well, come August, I was down the shore on vacation, and I talked to Mike one night, and he said to me, well, when you come home, you have a job. And I was like, okay. Well, the girl went to lunch and never came back. In the meantime, backtrack a little, that May, the trucking company that I worked for 16 years had offered, they were closed in the office in New Jersey. They offered to send me to Albany, New York. And I said, no, I wouldn't move. So I was off for the first time since I graduated from high school. So when he said I had a job, I was like, okay, well, I thought I was going to have a little bit more time off. But I came back and I went into the office and I started, basically I was general office work and a waitress, because you would go in and at 10 o'clock you would take the orders for break. And at noon, you take the orders. And then at the end of the week, it was trying to collect the money from all the mechanics. But being there every day, then I could see more of what he did and what he liked and more into who he was. He loved the trucks. He loved doing the work. He always said to people that when he was 10, his father asked him what he wanted for Christmas. And he said he wanted a truck. And his father brought him a tractor. And he started working on them since he was 10 years old. But he could probably work, take it apart and put it back together like nobody's business. When he was in high school and his father had a trucking company, he used to be on the phone talking to the drivers out on the road, telling them how to fix the truck. And then when he graduated from high school, he said the only reason he actually graduated was because he used to fix all the priests' cars. But he not only fixed trucks, he actually fabricated trucks. He would take, somebody would come in, and we did a lot of trash trucks. And they would come in, and trash trucks, you know, you don't just go to the trash truck store dealership and get a truck. You basically have to have it put together. So we had one customer from Deptford, and they used to come to us all the time. And he would take, you know, he'd take the old body off and put a new body on. Somebody would come in and want something done. And he tells a story that when he was, before I met him, so he was quite a bit younger, that someone had come in and they used to bring their vehicles in. And here the gentleman had kind of like a sideshow type thing. he would have like the smallest horse, the biggest horse, the smallest this, the biggest that. And they would come in and you know, Mike would fix their trucks or their trailers or whatever needed to be done. And then he had someone come in one time that there was a gay bar in Philadelphia that wanted to have a tractor put inside the bar on the second floor. So he went and got all the equipment, got an old tractor, got the hoist and all that stuff, opened up the side of the building and actually put it inside the gay bar. And so the guys could go in and drive, and they had the air horn, and he had a lot of different things, but he could, as far as doing anything mechanical, it wasn't really just trucks. He could do electrical work. He could do plumbing work. He had that kind of a mechanical mind. He could sit down with a piece of paper. He always had to draw things out. If he had an idea, he'd have to sit there and he'd have to show you with a piece of paper and a pencil. This is how you did it. This is how you did it. And then the older he got and his health wasn't so good, then that's when he really started to decline. But once he couldn't work on the trucks, then he wanted to own the trucks. So he bought a truck. Apparently, the first truck that he ever owned, it was a burnout truck from an old customer who was a friend. And the driver had had an accident in the vehicle and had died. And he bought basically the scrap from the wife. And he took that truck and took it down to Bare Bones. And he made his first tractor out of it. And he put that on the road. And he had the trucking company the first time. We had, I guess, 12 trucks. Then it just wasn't worth it anymore. At that time, he was running 12 trucks plus running a repair business. And it just wasn't worth it anymore. The trucking company wasn't bringing in enough money to be offset. But he was doing it how a mechanic would do it, which would be take an old truck and fix it up and put it on the road. But the drivers weren't out there to drive old trucks. The drivers wanted new trucks, you know, with all the latest bells and whistles and all that stuff. So he closed the trucking company then and just did the repairs. Then we bought a piece of property up in Pennsylvania where he used to go hunting. He loved to hunt. We have, as Joe can tell you, we have lots of deer heads, and I have an elk and I have a bear in my family room from Mike's hunting expeditions. He did love to hunt. But he kind of lost a lot of that. But he got into buying trucks when we built a house up in West Central Pennsylvania. He started with a couple trucks and then a couple more and then a couple more. It was the less he could do, the more it seemed like the more trucks he had. But basically, you know, that's what he wanted to do. He just wanted the trucks. And when a customer would come into his repair business, it wouldn't be, the customer wasn't the customer, the truck was the customer. So if a driver brought a truck in that the driver did not take care of, which was, you know, get in your truck every day, you have to check the oil and the water and the tires, and you walk around the truck, and you're supposed to do all that stuff anyway, drivers would just get in and go, you know, and the trucks would come in and they'd have, you know, no oil with blown engines. And Mike used to say, you know, this is something you have to maintain. You can't drive this into the ground. You have to take care of it. But we got to the point where some of the drivers would drop the trucks out in the yard. And then the owners would call us and tell us the trucks were in the yard because the drivers didn't want to get hollered at, because they would get hollered at if they didn't treat the trucks right. He just loved trucks.
How long ago has Uncle Mike been gone?
He died February 11th of 2012. So he's been gone about 2.5 years.
So what would you say inspired him the most?
The way he enjoyed working with his hands with the trucks. He had a real mechanical mind. So the best he was when someone would come in and he would have to fabricate something, and he would sit there and that would give him great joy, because that's what he loved to do, is to make something out of nothing. He would make tools. Like if he had a job to do and it was hard to get to a spot on the truck, he made his own tool so he could fix it. But that's basically what his love was, that hands-on mechanical stuff. So when he actually couldn't do it anymore, it really, really hurt him, especially after he had his accident, because he thought he would be able to go out in the garage. Last thing he tried to do was go out into the garage at the house. He thought he could sit down and do a transmission because they feared, he couldn't walk, but he could sit. But he just couldn't do it anymore. And that was kind of like the beginning of the downfall, because then it's like, why keep going?
Well, you mentioned accident. Could you elaborate more on that?
Yes. When we were living up in Pennsylvania, he was out on a Cub Cadet, but it's what I call a four-wheeler with a steering wheel. And he went out one night, and he was supposed to be checking the back of the property. We had 63 acres up there. And 40 minutes, he wasn't back, so I called friends of ours, and they went out looking for him, and they never found him till 10:30 that night. Here he had gone down a 65-foot embankment. But he was fine. In fact, when our friends found him, he said to them, "You passed me twice." So he did have quite a dry sense of humor. But he seemed fine. They said he shattered the bone in his elbow, and he wanted to go home from the emergency room. But they said, no, stay overnight. Well, once he stayed overnight, then the next afternoon I got the phone call that, things weren't going so well. He was confused. He didn't know where he was. And they wound up putting him in intensive care. And then they had to intubate him because he kept short breathing, like he wasn't getting all the carbon dioxide out of his lungs. So they had to ventilate him. And they sent him over to, this was out in Altoona, Pennsylvania. So they wanted to send him over to Pittsburgh, but I suggested they send him to Philadelphia, since that's where all our family is, outside of the Philadelphia area. And so that's what they did. And he was in intensive care at the University of Pennsylvania for 7 weeks. And then he was in a long-term acute care hospital for 2 months. And then the problem is that there's no facility for someone that is overweight and on a ventilator. And he was on Medicare. Well, in New Jersey, they don't accept Medicare in these places, like long-term. And so I tried to find a place over in Pennsylvania up near Mike's sister, up near Aunt Rita. And they wouldn't take him either, so I really had no choice but to bring him home. So we brought him home on a ventilator, September of 2010. And by March 2011, he was off the ventilator, and he had been trached. So he was off the ventilator, and he was actually off the trach, but he just couldn't walk again. He just, after being hospitalized and in bed that long, and he had bad knees to begin with, and he put up with it. I mean, he walked. They had told him he needed knee replacements years ago, but they told him come back after he lost 100 pounds, because he was a big Santa Claus, is what everybody would call him, because that's what he looked like, Santa Claus. Big jolly. Well, he wasn't jolly. He was definitely more on the quiet side. But yet, what I saw of him and what I knew of him, he was very funny. We'd be watching TV at night, and I would say, "Now, why did they do that?" And all of a sudden, he'd pick up the phone, and he'd pretend to dial. I said, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm calling them to find out why they're doing it that way." But a lot of people never saw that side of him. He didn't really show his true colors to a lot of people.
No, I can attest to a lot of that.
Yes, in fact, the one time was when Joe's sister, when Joe and Michelle were real little. Michelle was probably 2. We had gone to the family Christmas party, per se. And Santa Claus told Michelle that she wouldn't be able to get any gifts unless she went and gave Uncle Mike a kiss. So she ran across the room. She stood in front of Mike. And she turned around and ran away. And believe it or not, Mike enjoyed that, because he loved to torment little kids. He just loved them. He always wanted to hold them, but he loved to torment them. He would call little boys, little girls, and little girls, little boys. You know, it's just, he had a very weird sense of humor.
I can attest to that, too. How did his dream come about? You said at 10 years old he wanted a truck.
I'm not sure whether it was because Mike was so talented with trucks. His father did all kinds of stuff. His father used to do wallpaper and painting, and he was he sold produce, and he did get into trucks because of the produce. And then he started to have trucks, and then Mike would fix them. But then the story that I had heard was that the drivers were going to go union, and the family didn't want that, so they closed the company up then. Then basically they started to just do repairs, and Mike's father had bought the property over in Deptford. And at the time they were doing, Seabrook Farms was a big customer, and they used to repair all their trucks. And then the family got into Pioneer Truck Rentals. They used to buy trucks, fix them up, and they would rent out the trucks. They were kind of ahead of their time before, like, Ryder or all those other companies got into it. But basically, they had all the trucks. And I'm not sure of why the trucks for the rentals, I'm not sure how that actually happened. Your dad may know more of that part of it. But then they got into the truck sales. And Uncle Mike told me the story that he was so young that when his father had the shop over in Deptford, which actually was where Pioneer started, there was an older gentleman there. And Mike's father sent him over there to run the shop over there. And the older gentleman didn't like it because Mike was probably 20. And finally, they had to let the other guy go because Mike knew more than the older gentleman. But the older gentleman really didn't want to answer to a young fellow, which I can understand now that I'm older. But basically, that's all he wanted to do with his life. He just wanted to fix the trucks. That's all he wanted to do, was work on trucks. And then when he ran into financial problems, that's how he would make extra money. He'd go work for somebody else fixing trucks. You know, early on, Pioneer wasn't that successful. It was really just starting out. You know, and it was a family business, so it was not only Mike, but his brother, your grandfather, and their father. So, you know, there wasn't lots of money going around. So when you have family obligations, Mike would go and work other. I mean, that's how good he was. Other shops would hire him. And then when I got to really work in the garage, I could see where there was really nobody else in our area around that did the kind of work that Mike did. Mike never, ever turned down a job. Whatever came in, no matter what it was, we used to call some of them the jobs from hell. But he wouldn't give up until it got fixed. And there's lots of times that, you know, we probably wound up paying for the job more so than what the customer could have ever paid. Because Mike, once he got his claws into it, that was it. He was going to fix it, come hell or high water.
So do you recall any stories about how his dream was received by his family? Whether they were supportive? Because, I mean, Pioneer wasn't around when he was born. So to fall in love with trucks at such a young age and to be mechanically inclined, how was that looked at by my great-grandfather?
Perfect. Oh, that just fit right into the scheme of things, because he had trucks. I mean, your great-grandfather started from absolutely nothing. In fact, him and your great-grandmother moved in with your grandmother's family when they first got married. So what he built, but that's a whole other podcast for somebody else to tell. But, I mean, he did whatever he could to take care of the family. And he went and he bought a truck so that he could deliver the produce. And then, I guess, his love of the trucks, I mean, then he got involved in the trucks, little by little, your great-grandfather. And then when Uncle Mike came along, he just had a natural talent for it. And he had the perfect segue into what he wanted to do with the rest of his life. And it worked out well because it became a family deal where Mike would take care of the trucks and his brother took care of the business end of it. And the father just kind of oversaw everything. So it was like he never ever wanted to do anything else with his life, just the trucks.
Do you recall what steps he took to get started?
Well, his father had a garage over in Philadelphia. And when he was the kid after school, he would go over and work in it, you know, and I'm sure, you know, doing oil changes or whatever. I mean, Mike was a big guy, but not only was he a big guy, but he had broad shoulders. And back when he was working on things, there were no lifts and stuff like that. He worked out on, you know, bare concrete floor, you know, picking up transmissions. I mean, he had arms that were, you know, solid. He may have been a big, heavy guy, but he was a solid guy. So a lot of it was just because of what he did. But he just, this is what he wanted to do. It was what he was meant to do. But now he always dreamed of having trucks. That's what, trucks on the road, having a trucking company. And he got to do that not once, but twice. And the second time was when we were living up in Pennsylvania. We had 13 tractors on the road. He had a little shop down there with two mechanics that, you know, helped fix the trucks. And he was in his glory. But then he had the accident. And I did whatever I could do to keep those trucks running, because I knew if he didn't have those trucks to come back to, I'm not sure how much he would have come back. And he came back.
So what were some of the roadblocks that he hit over the course of the years?
Well, he did have open heart surgery. I don't remember exactly what year it was. I think it was like maybe 2001. It was the year William was born, because Maria had just had the baby. And Mike went for where they go in through the groin. Can't think of what it's called. Catheterization. And they said he needed to have open heart surgery. So we went home that day, and he went back 4 days later and had open heart surgery. And then after that, things kind of went downhill from that, just trying to get himself back into some kind of shape. He was overweight, you know, out of shape, overweight. And that was his biggest drawback, is that, you know, he would try diet after diet after diet. And then we would try twice. We went to doctors for the gastric bypass surgery. One, we got as close as like 3 days before the surgery. And then the doctor said he wouldn't do it because it was too high of a risk. Then we went over to the University of Pennsylvania. And they said no. By that time, he was older, and it was too high of a risk that they weren't sure whether he would come out from the surgery. So after two times of being told that, then he said, forget it. Basically, his biggest obstacle in his life was his weight.
How exactly did Uncle Mike work through being overweight?
He never did. He suffered with it. He suffered with bad knees. He didn't live long enough to overcome it, put it that way. He really didn't live long enough to overcome it. The accident was really the beginning of the end for him. If he hadn't had the accident, he may have. But the accident just, I mean, it put him in an early grave. He was only 67 when he died.
Yeah, definitely gone too soon.
Way too soon. Way too soon.
Was there any parts of his dream that didn't quite work out for him?
But I think the economy got so bad that he tried to do everything the old way, the way he was used to doing things. But the world was changing. The economy was changing. There was more repair shops around. When he was used to being the only one around, then all of a sudden there was more repair shops around. New trucks were coming out, like foreign trucks that were real affordable were coming out. So a lot of the customers were going to new trucks. So the work wasn't there for him. And he still wanted to operate the old way. Like, he never looked towards the future the way he should have, as far as how the world was changing, because it was the same way for so long. He was so successful for so long. I used to say to him, you know, one of these days, because he used to complain about all the work. I said, one of these days there won't be the work. And the one day came when it just, you know, you were looking for work. But that wasn't him. That was the way the economy got. That was in 2008, when kind of the bottom fell out of everything for everybody.
So if he was stranded on a desert island with his family, what three things do you think he would want to have with him?
Definitely pistachios. I love pistachios. Probably his truck, his purple pickup truck, and probably his Hershey bar with nuts.
What were his dreams for the future like?
Well, he was really trying to establish a trucking company. He was hoping that, you know, build on that, something for his children and his grandchildren's future that, you know, might help them have an easier life in their future because of something he had built. But it was always his dream to have a trucking company.
You know, you mentioned earlier about him being really kind to the companies that dealt with him. One thing you didn't really mention was the kindness to the level of almost painfulness that he took letting people use his storage or whatever for many, many, in some cases forever.
Well, it's still happening.
with no monetary.
Well, he always had an exterior of a grizzly bear, but inside he was a teddy bear. I mean, if somebody came up with a sad story, he'd be putting his hand in his pocket to help him out. I saw it over and over again. If somebody needed something, he was there. And, you know, if someone came to him and they were having problems money-wise, and one instant was that they wanted him to buy their house so they could get the money so they could pay and get their bill straightened out, and then basically in 2 years remortgage the house and get it back. Well, I always say that no good deed goes unpunished. And his saying was always, he would say, my father always told me that if you help somebody out, that'll come back to you tenfold. Well, it never seemed to come back to him tenfold. No matter how he would help out, it always came back to bite him in the butt. No matter what. I mean, I'm still dealing with it even after he's gone. You know, I still have situations where, you know, he helped people out. And people take advantage of it. You know, with him they didn't, because he was a force to be reckoned with. But I'm not, so I inherited a lot of the good deeds that he did. But he was, yeah. If somebody came to him with a sad story, he was always ready to help. Even if it wasn't monetary. Even if it was just talking to someone. Or let's go get something to eat. Or, you know, he was always ready to help somebody.
So is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
Oh, just that I wish he had lasted a lot longer. That he had lived a lot longer. And he would have lived to watch his grandsons grow up. Because he did love his grandsons. When we lived up in Pennsylvania, he would, every night, he'd call Michael or he'd call William. And then it was funny, we would call William, and William would go, hi, Pop. And Mike would say to him, William, can you loan me some money? He said, Pop, I don't have any money. William, will you loan me a dollar? And on Friday, I'll give you five. No, Pop, I'm not lending you any money. Can I talk to Grandma? So he would complain. He never wants to talk to me. Well, this one day, William got Mike on the phone, and he kept talking, and Mike kept saying to him, you want to talk to Grandma? No, Pop, I want to talk to you. William, you want to talk? So when they really wanted to talk to him, then it was like, okay, now I understand. But, you know, he really loves his two grandsons. Were like the light of his life. He really enjoyed having the two boys. I don't know whether he would have been happy with girls, but he loved having the boys. He'd have them out on the four-wheelers, or he'd have them on the trucks. You know, we'd be in the garage. Mike would be on his scooter, and he'd have William in the front of the scooter going around the shop. Or if we had a front-end loader or something in the shop, he'd have William up there, and William would pretend he was, you know, moving the gears and driving the trucks. So, yeah, definitely He loved his grandsons, and they loved him, so.
Well, thank you for sharing all that. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
You're welcome. Anytime. Take care.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.